Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game, back at a Chuckery Show, halfway home on this Monday evening with you. 404-726-0929, that's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Odyssey app's how you catch us on the go. Social media is at 929 The Game. I'm at JMCH316. Got our guy Garrett in here producing tonight, so Day-Day taking a few days off. Garrett's producing tonight. Dom DeLuise will produce tomorrow, and then Day-Day will be back on Wednesday. And then I think he's on vacation again or something toward the end of next week or whatever like that. I'll be gone the week of the 4th of July. So, you know, we talked about this weeks ago, right? Before the month even started, that we talked about, and we talked about this with multiples of our folks we talked to about Justin Toscano, or Grant, or Chris Willis. I mean, people we talked to about the Braves. And we talked about the idea of that the schedule really lightens up in the month of June. That the Braves have played a bit of a gauntlet so far to that point, you know, through Memorial Day and heading into June. But they were going to play some last-place teams, some teams that have probably overachieved, and some teams that just weren't very good with a chance to gain a lot of ground over the Mets and Phillies in this month, right? We talked about all of that stuff. So what have the Braves gone out and done in the month of June? They've played 16 games thus far. So 16 games this month. They are 13-3 for the month. They've scored 113 runs in the 16 games. Garrett, give me pull your calculator out on your phone real quick and divide 113 by 16. They've had 176 hits.
Seven.
So they've scored 7 runs a game.
It's pretty darn good.
Yeah, 7 runs a game in this month. They've hit 34 homers this month, driven in 108, 60 walks, 109 strikeouts, 14 stolen bases with only 2 caught stealing. 14 steals with only 2 caught. For the month, they've hit .314 with a .378 on-base percentage, a .550 slugging percentage. That comes out to, are you ready? A .928 OPS. For an entire team, for a month, They have an OPS of 920. Not Ozuna or Ronnie or individual player. As the entire team, they have an OPS of 928. Their offense has been outstanding. And we talked about this, I joked about this the other day with Gabe Burns a week or two ago that, you know, they say in golf, Saturday is moving day, right? That's when you start to get the fluctuations of the leaderboard, and Saturday's moving day where you get yourself up in the rankings, right? This month was going to be moving day for the Braves. June was going to be moving day for the Braves. And when you look at what this team has done and the fact that they've started to put some distance between themselves and the Mets having swept the Mets out of town. They got the Phillies now coming up. So Right now, the Braves are five games up in the division. They've expanded their lead over the Marlins. They're eight games over Philadelphia, and they're now 12.5 games over the New York Mets, who are in fourth place. The Mets are in fourth place, 33-38, 12.5 games out of first. And now guess what that they have the chance to do? Now they have a chance to take on the Phillies and beat the daylights out of them and put them double-digit games behind the lead in the division. And we kind of predicted this come first part of June that we said, you know, this would be an opportunity to open up a lead where you're 10 games or more up on both the Phillies and the New York Mets. So now the Braves are in Philadelphia. They'll take on the Mets. Strider, Smith, Shaver, and Bryce Elder will be your three starters. Suarez, Nola, and Walker will be your three starters for Philadelphia. That'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, and then getaway day on Thursday, where they will play at 1:05 on Thursday, Businessmen Special. And then, by the way, too, that week, this upcoming weekend, the Phillies and the Mets will play one another. So they'll start to beat each other up. Meanwhile, the Atlanta Braves, who, you know, we've talked about the fact that this schedule's been to their liking, they will take on the Cincinnati Reds this coming weekend. So they go to the Reds, who right now are, hold please, the Reds are 37-35. They're in second place, half game behind the Milwaukee Brewers. But let's face it, the Reds are not that great of a team. The Reds, by the way, are only 17-18 at home with a -19 run differential. And they've won eight games in a row. They've won eight in a row, and there's still a -19 run differential and only two games above .500. So what does that tell you about where the Cincinnati Reds have been? So again, by the time we get to July, this could open itself up to a pretty good sizable lead over both the Mets and the Phillies. The Mets are out of it. I'll go ahead and call it. The Mets are not leaping over Philly, Miami, and Atlanta to win the NL East. The Braves may not win the NL East, but the Mets are certainly not winning the NL East. They're not overtaking all three of those teams. And this could be when you get to the first part of July, depending on what the Phillies do. Let's say the Phillies sweep the Braves when all is said and done. Let's say they sweep the Mets. Say the Phillies sweep the Mets after we kick the crap out of Philadelphia. They go in and sweep the Mets. The Mets may be looking at being out altogether. They might be behind the eight ball completely, the division out of hand. And by the way, the Mets are only six games ahead of the Washington Nationals. What does that tell you? With about a payroll of $500 million more than the Washington Nationals, they're only six games better than Washington, who threw in the towel a decade ago, right, or whatever. I mean, they've been behind the eight ball for a while now. But we've talked about this is a chance for the Braves to do what they've got to do. And even with the struggles of their starting pitching, when Morton or Strider or Elder, when some of those guys haven't pitched as well, the fact is that their offense has been outstanding. Their offense hasn't been good. Their offense has been outstanding. And, you know, it's been a situation where when you average seven runs per game, all you got to do is just be competent pitching, right? I mean, just be competent in the way of pitching. Now, as far as the pitching goes in the month of June, let's see here. I was trying to figure out their As far as the pitching goes in the month of June, I'm trying to pull up the stats on it right now. Hold, please. The Braves are the 13-3 record, obviously. They've struck out 153 guys in 144 and a third innings pitched. They have a 4.12 ERA. Now, 4.12 ERA would probably not lead you to believe. And by the way, they've given up 26 homers. So they've hit 34 homers, and they've given up 26 homers with a 4.12 ERA, 135 hits in 144 innings, 51 walks, 26 homers given up, with a whip of, what's their whip? Doesn't have it here on this thing. But with a 4.12 ERA, you wouldn't guess that a team would be 13-3 this month, getting battered around like that. But here the Braves are, 13-3, the best team in the National League by far. And I'll say it, you know, again, I know the Dodgers will be there and this and that and okay, blah, 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 blah. But right now the Braves are the class of Major League Baseball. They may be the class of Major League Baseball right now. Their offense has been clicking. And what have we said before? When they get the bottom of that order going, when they get the bottom of the order cranked up and going, and it's no matter what the combination is, RC has been outstanding. He should be an all-star player. Ronnie's an all-star, the MVP of the league. Olsen should probably be in the all-star game. Albie should probably be in the all-star game. They have so many guys that should be in the all-star game. Strider should be an all-star. They have so many guys that should be in. But when they get the bottom of that order cranked up and going, and I haven't looked and seen what the bottom, you know, guys like Arcia and Harris and guys like that, when they get the bottom of the order going, they're unbeatable. Like, you're not going to beat the Braves if they end up with 7 for 14, you know, 7 for 13, score 5 runs, drive in 6 runs. You're not going to beat them when it gets to be the bottom 3 of the order. And that's where the real depth of this lineup comes into. That's where you really separate what they're doing and what a lot of other teams are doing. You know, everybody has really good players at the top of their roster. I mean, again, aside from the Oaklands and the Detroit Tigers and, you know, the dregs of the universe, you know, the teams that are really good have good players at the very top. But what separates the Braves from everybody else is that depth of lineup and how they go 1-9 and everybody can be productive. Doesn't matter. Even guys that aren't playing, coming off the bench, whether it's a Darnold or whether it's a Sean Murphy, you have so much depth in this lineup that when they got a clicking, and especially that bottom part, you're not going to beat them. That's how they're averaging 7 runs a game, because they get significant contributions out of their 7, 8, 9 hitters. I know Ronnie's a really good hitter. I know Ozzie's a really good hitter. I know Matt Olson's a really good hitter. We've talked about the fact that Austin Riley has been a guy that's benefited. Austin Riley's hitting .136 with runners in scoring position. Yet he's on pace for 80 runs to drive in and his career high in runs scored. Why? Because he's got everybody around him that he can either drive in, because he's coming up. He's got a 26% runners in scoring position to plate appearance average. So basically, 1 out of every 4 times, he's guaranteed to have somebody as a runner in scoring position. He's going to go 4 at-bats in a game, and 1 of those at-bats will be with somebody in scoring position. That's how it's averaged out for this year. Not for the month of June. I'm talking about for the entire season. He's averaging 1 out of every 4 at-bats with a guy in scoring position. You get that kind of opportunity, I don't know if that leads the league or not. I don't know, you know, what those kinds of numbers are, but I would tell you that you'd have to be pretty good. If you're just competent in the lineup, you can drive in a whole bunch of runs. And he's getting an opportunity 1 out of every 4 at-bats to drive somebody home. And then when he gets on base, everybody's just doing their thing. Like, everybody's just bashing the ball away. And everybody's just circling the bases. And it's just crazy to think about how good and how deep this lineup has been for the Braves. So we talked about June being the moving month. We talked about June, the schedule lightening up drastically. Braves have taken full advantage of it. 13-3, hitting .314 for the month of June with a .928 OPS. Is that good? All right, when we get back, it'll be time for That's Life. Did you see BB Rexha was hit in the face with a phone? Yes. Plus our top 10 as well. Chuck in the Kia Studios, Sports Radio, 929 The Game, Odyssey.com now. So, 929 The Game, back at it, Chuck Reese Show. 921 live from the Kia Studios. You know what time it is.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say.
404-726-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Odyssey app is how you catch us on the go. Social media is at 929 The Game. I'm at JMCH316 on Twitter. Happy Juneteenth to everybody who celebrates today. So we get the federal holiday today and coming a day after Father's Day, so busy weekend for a lot of folks, but happy Juneteenth to everybody who celebrates. Do you know who BB Rexha is, young Garrett?
Yeah, I do.
You like her?
Sure. I mean, she's fine. She's talented.
She is. She's a good-looking woman, too.
Sure. Talented can mean two things, John.
What's that? What's that? Say again now?
Talented means two things, sir.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they both are. So anyway. She was in concert over the weekend, and a fan threw a phone at her and smacked her right in the head. And there's video of it too, where she got hit right in the face. Her mother, BB Rex's mom, said that she ended up in the hospital and had to have stitches on her face.
Fans are the worst, man.
Now, what would possess somebody to throw their phone at her face? Like, what? I'm just trying to understand, okay? Because, I mean, she's probably pretty young. She's probably a millennial like you. What would possess somebody to... What's the appeal about throwing your phone at her face?
I guess because they wanted her to take a picture.
But the guy was arrested.
I mean, it's battery.
Well, yeah, it's not like he got away with it. So what would
position? I don't think it was vindictive. I doubt it was. I mean, because you would use something other than your phone.
But what would the purpose be?
You wanted to take a selfie. It looked like I've seen the video. Okay, I agree. Don't throw your phone at another human being. But I've seen the video, and it looks like she's holding out her hand or something. And maybe he thought that she was like saying, "Toss me your phone." And
how stupid is that guy?
He also just chucked that thing.
Yeah, he did. Because
whipped it in there.
It caused her to have stitches on her face.
Was it Joe Milton who threw it?
I mean,
he's got a cannon.
Well,
he threw it hard, man.
I was gonna say, I mean, you know, Carson Beck. But again, like, can you get the electric chair or something like that? Is that possible?
I don't think so, John. He'll get a fine, 60 days in jail or something.
Yeah, he should. He should go on the chain gang and start having and breaking rocks. Like, how stupid are these people? Like, I don't understand. But you know, that's why celebrities don't want to get near their fans and stuff like that, because you might get hit in the face and get stitches from a cell phone. Ugh, Lord have mercy. All right, a bunch of birthdays today. It's David Pollack's birthday today. Zoe Saldana's birthday is today. She's a good-looking woman. Speaking of good-looking women, Dirk Nowitzki's birthday is today. Paula Abdul. Do you like Paula Abdul?
You're going to hate me for this, but I know Paula more for American Idol.
Yeah,
that's my generation.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that because, again, you would have been exposed to her, or what, I think how long has American Idiot been around?
2001,
Holy
smokes.
It's got to be 20 years old.
It died for a couple years, and then it came back.
Then they brought it back, yeah.
Because it was Seacrest. Simon
Cowell wasn't part of it anymore, right?
Yeah, but it's not the same without Simon Cowell. Right, I know that. Brian Katy Perry and Richie.
It was a totally different show when he was originally
on. Oh, no, he's the OG.
Yeah.
No, he's absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, the first time Paula Abdul went up to sing, and I was like, why is Paula singing? I was like eight.
But he actually created the show, Simon Cowell.
Yeah, and then he did a break spinoff of like Project
X. When I bumped into him at LAX, he was getting out of a car, and he was with his girlfriend at the time, and I was trying to get up to the gate for my flight because we were running late, and I kind of just bumped into him.
What's he like?
I mean, he's you know, again, a dwarf. I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's like 5'4 or something.
Oh, yeah.
5'5.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the guy who's really small is Cato Kaelin. Cato Kaelin's really small. Like, I saw him in Hollywood at Lucky Strike, and I took his girl and went and played pool. But anyway, that's a whole separate story on there.
So, you steal his woman, man?
Yeah, I mean.
John, come on, man.
Man, look.
You can't steal another man's woman.
She was a good-looking woman.
Sure.
And she kept watching us playing pool at Lucky Strike, the bowling alley, the celebrity bowling alley. And I was like, hey, you want to come over and play with us? And she's like, yeah. So I brought her over, and we started playing pool together.
Good for you, man.
So why not? Well, what was he going to do? In all honesty, like, you know, again, this is 2002 or 3. Like, I'm all jacked up on roids and everything like that. What's he going to do?
Makes sense.
Yeah, what's he going to do? So, anyway.
Back in your security guard phase.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. All right. Ann Wilson. Do you know who Ann Wilson is?
I know that name.
She's the lead singer of Heart.
Okay.
Fabulous singer. Like, one of the best voices of all time.
I bet.
Lou Gehrig and Mo Howard. Do you know who Mo Howard is?
I don't know that one.
The Three Stooges.
Oh, Larry Moe and Curly. Yes. That's what my mom called us when we were kids.
Okay.
Larry Moe and Curly.
Well, again.
I knew his actual name. I know Larry Moe and Curly.
I'm sure you were Curly. Anyway, they were all brothers. You know that? Mm-hmm. And Shemp was the other brother, too. So.
Okay. I was Moe, by the way. I'm the middle brother.
Yeah. I mean, you look more like Larry, but anyway.
I do.
You don't have, like, the stringy hair sticking out the sides or anything like that, though. But anyway. All right. So tonight's top 10 list. Your top 10, I was thinking about this with Bebe Rexha, because she's got that song out that is the sample of that blue da-ba-dee-da-ba-da song with David Guetta and all that.
Yeah, it's a great song.
Yeah, so it's a fun song to dance to.
Of course.
So tonight's top 10 list, and I'm very interested to hear this out of Garrett. Your top 10 favorite songs to go out and dance to. Garrett, the floor is yours.
See, John Chucker, when you first mentioned this to me, I was like, is this just a wedding? And then I thought, the more I think about it, I'm like, yeah, this is just something that the music I'd want to hear at a wedding.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I want, because I'm a dancer at a wedding.
Or at a club. I mean, if you go to a club or
something. I don't really go to clubs, though. I go to bars and have, like, live music, but I'm not dancing at bars.
You're one of those people that go to, like, one of those clubs that has, like, an acoustic guitar and all that kind of stuff.
I don't go to clubs. I go to bars.
Like a bar. You go to, like, a bar. Guy's got an acoustic guitar and all that. He's singing live.
Sure, yeah. Okay. I'll do that. Right. I'll do that ahead of it. Or just like a regular old band or something.
Okay.
It's not really dancing music necessarily. It's foot tapping music.
Sure.
You know, head bobbing music. But for dancing, I'm thinking of a wedding. So I have to think of stuff that I would want. I'd want my date to want. So I had to think through some of these things. Okay. So number 10, I got Dancing Queen, ABBA.
Okay.
Good song. 9 is Feel So Close. It's Calvin Harris.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Great song.
Yeah.
I'm mixing genres here, by the way.
No. This is supposed to be all over the board.
Of course. I got a bunch of them. So the next one's Closer by Chainsmokers. You might remember that one. This just takes me back to college, back when I was dancing with more ladies.
I know who the Chainsmokers are, but I don't remember that song.
Halsey was also on that song.
Okay.
If I played that, I can play it as a bumper, and you will absolutely recognize it.
I would probably recognize it.
You'll recognize it.
With Halsey and everything, I'd probably recognize it.
It was played. It reminds me of my junior year of college.
Okay.
Specifically, and it was played every karaoke night in Statesboro. It was played 3 or 4 times.
Nice.
It was just one of those songs.
All right.
7, Hey Ya, Outkast.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Number 6, Don't You Worry, Child. That's Swedish House Mafia.
Swedish House Mafia.
Yeah, Don't You Worry, Child.
I'm not familiar with their work. I'm not familiar.
They're pretty
with their
good.
Work. Okay,
you'd enjoy it if you like some of these other. If you like Calvin Harris and you like, Swedish House Mafia.
Well, Calvin Harris is like one of those DJs that's worked with everybody, right?
Well, that's what Swedish House Mafia.
Rihanna and Dua Lipa.
Yeah, you would recognize Swedish House Mafia too. 5 is Usher and Ludacris.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah.
Number 4 is In the Club, 50 Cent. In Duck Club, I guess, but
okay, no, yeah,
50 Cent.
We'll talk about that song in a minute here too, because that's
like
on
I'm
my
talking
list.
Different genres.
Mm-hmm.
3, gotta get some Tim McGraw in here. I like it. I love it.
Really?
Yeah,
so
that's a good
country.
One. Little country. I love.
Wow.
I'm a Statesboro guy, man.
Okay,
Georgia Southern. I had to throw a little country in there.
All right,
you know, number 2.
Now is he? You know, again, is he considered real country?
Sure. I mean, he was kind of.
He was kind of the
big show. Like, he's big show country. He's a stadium.
He was the forerunner of those. Because now all the country artists aren't really country artists.
They're making a return back.
Luke Bryan and all that. Like, those guys aren't country artists.
Yeah, well, Luke Bryan's not, but Tyler Childers is.
Let me tell you. If Waylon Jennings had met any of those guys, like Luke Bryan and stuff like that, he would have taken his guitar and smashed it over his head.
Now, Zach Bryan, you know, Something in the Orange, you know, stuff like that?
Yeah.
That's more country music. Tyler Childress, more country music. I mean,
Luke Combs, that's not country.
No.
Luke Combs.
That's not proper country.
Luke Combs is a song on now where he's covering that Tracy Chapman song.
Luke Combs can it's Drive, right?
Yes.
Great song. But not Drive. It's Daddy's Car or something like that. I can't remember what it is. But Drive is also another great song. I actually thought about putting that one on here. Alan Jackson.
At least Alan Jackson's country. He's
country. That's proper country.
Yeah, I mean, all that's good stuff.
But Tim McGraw is the guy you're going to go find at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Tug McGraw's son, the former relief pitcher.
Really?
You didn't know that?
No, I had no idea.
His dad was Tug McGraw, the famous relief pitcher. Closed out the 1980 World Series for the Philadelphia Phillies.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. Left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, well, Tim McGraw can sell out a stadium.
Oh, yeah.
He sure
can. He's got a good-looking wife.
Sure does. He absolutely does.
Yeah.
Number two on the list, Levels by Avicii.
Oh, okay.
That's a great song.
I know what that is, yes.
And
yes.
That takes me back to high school a little bit, just when it was the backdrop of every single hype video that I ever watched.
Nice.
Every single hype video. And number one, of course, Mr. Brightside by The Killers.
Ooh, boy.
Love that song.
Wow, okay.
You play that song at a wedding, that gets every single person their height. Every single person's on the dance floor for Mr. Brightside.
Okay, if it's young people. If
you're under the age of 40, you're on the dance floor.
I'll give you the best dance song of all time. All right, so my honorable mention list is Dress You Up by Madonna. Erotic City by Prince.
Okay.
Billie Jean by Michael Jackson.
I almost put that one on there.
You could do Beat It as well, but Billie Jean is the one. Is the real song that gets it going. It Takes Two by Rob Bass.
Okay.
I'm going to skip around here a little bit. YMCA, because
fine.
Again,
that one's even too cheesy for me.
I know, but again, I grew up in the 70s, so you know, I was listening to the Village People when they were live, like when those songs were popular in the Navy, YMCA, Macho Man.
I just can't even think about YMCA.
It takes me back
to like camp. That's all I can think of is camp.
We had that because again, you can have the fun with the
of course, and it's fun for kids and it's easy to dance to and whatever.
Love You Like a Love Song, by Selena Gomez.
What's Selena in there?
What's that?
Little Selena Gomez.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Right. On the Floor by Jennifer Lopez. Love that song.
I don't like Jennifer Lopez.
Really?
It's a hot take, I know, but it's just.
Wow.
They're going to blast me on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line for that take, I'm not a big fan of her.
Okay. All right.
She just doesn't do it for me. I'm sorry.
Levitating by Dua Lipa.
Great song.
Love that song.
Song of the summer last year.
Yes. Love that song.
Great song.
So, Into Club is on my list as well.
Of course.
Now, that
checks
was
a lot of boxes.
That was in the early mid 2000s when that came up. So I'm telling you, when that song, when I was like partying in bars and nightclubs in Midtown, and when that song would come on, I mean, everybody went to the dance floor. When he starts off with the go shorty, it's your birthday, and it's about as good as it gets. Everybody is on the floor and singing that song. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the great songs to get everybody together of all time.
Everybody gets hyped up for that one.
Absolutely.
Everybody does.
Absolutely. The best dance song ever done is Staying Alive by the Bee Gees.
Oh, good one. That's a good one.
Because you can get black, white, you can get old, young, you can get kids, even my teenage daughter knows that song.
Everybody knows that song.
And it's got that beat that is completely infectious.
Mm-hmm.
And then my personal other favorite is LL Cool J, Around the Way Girl. I love Around the Way Girl by LL Cool J. Love that song. So hit us up with your list as well. When we get back, Kevin Sweeney joined us earlier in the show from SI.com talking some NBA draft. Chuck, we're hanging out in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio 929 The Game, Odyssey.com app.
But my heart won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking, come this here July.
Sports Radio 929 The Game. It is the John Chuck Reese Show coming to you live on this Monday evening as we get ready for the NBA draft coming up Thursday. Don't forget, we'll be at State Farm Arena. Myself, Deshaun Tate, Caleb Johnson. We will all be there at State Farm for the Atlanta Hawks draft party. So come on, get a ticket and come on out to State Farm Arena and join us. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Let's talk about the NBA draft with Kevin Sweeney. He's college basketball and NBA draft writer for Sports Illustrated. SI.com is where you can check out all of his work. And he is on Twitter at @CBB_Central. Kevin, really appreciate a few minutes with us tonight. Thanks for joining us in Atlanta.
Yeah, appreciate you having me, guys.
Let's start with the Hawks pick at 15. You know, this looks like a pick that whatever player it is, and I really don't even care what the name is on the back of the jersey, this feels like one of those picks that's going to end up in the G League pretty quickly, given the fact that the Hawks have so many guys under contract, and they do have a plethora of young players that are on the roster actively. It feels like their pick at 15 is more kind of just let that kid go to College Park, play for the Skyhawks, and let him develop from there.
It's right in that weird range where if it was in the 20s, you'd feel really confident in saying that. At 15, it's a chance you can get a pretty good player. And I think if you're the Hawks, you're hoping to get some long-term upside there, whether that's a guy who can play right away or a guy who needs more seasoning. If I was Atlanta, though, I think I'd be trying to swing for, can we find that extra starter in a couple of years that could really help us down the line on a cheap contract?
Do you think that there's any chance that the Hawks could move either direction, whether they look at moving up in the draft or whether they look down? I mean, what are you kind of hearing about potential Hawks rumors about, you know, going either direction, or are they content just to kind of stay at 15?
I mean, everyone's talking this time of year. I haven't necessarily heard the Hawks is like a leader to move up or down, but I think there's a real chance that things get a little crazy here in the first 5 to 8 picks, and if that happens, there could be quite a bit of trickle down the draft that could impact the Hawks.
Do you think that there are teams that are actually looking to – I mean, look, if we know that the number one pick is set in stone, does that encourage teams to want to draft higher? Or, you know, because, again, you know, you're not going to get the best player, arguably, in the draft. Are teams scared off from trading high up into the draft?
I don't necessarily think they're scared off, because I think there's three other guys that I think most teams really value and have – most teams believe have a chance to have like a high level of success in the NBA, and that'd be Scoot Henderson from G League Ignite, Amen Thompson from Overtime Elite, and Brandon Miller from Alabama. I think you've seen the Pelicans have been very vocal about wanting to move up and potentially get Scoot at 2 or 3. I think he will be the clearest target of a lot of teams trying to move up, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to see movement in the top four to get their hands on one of those big name prospects. It's not just a Wemby draft, and that's the common narrative, and he's really, really good. He's transcendent, but I think there's really, you know, there is strength at the top of this board outside of him that teams will want to attack.
Kevin Sweeney joining me here on the WadeFord.com hotline, college hoops writer and NBA draft writer for Sports Illustrated, SI.com, so we can check out all of his work. So you mentioned Brandon Miller, and obviously I guess there's baggage that goes along with that pick. But, you know, at the end of the day, is it just a matter of talent wins out? I mean, I know he didn't get in any trouble, but obviously the optics of the situation at Alabama are going to follow him around. But is it just a matter of the talent is too great to pass on him, or is anybody potentially scared off by some of the off-the-court things that went on?
I think teams have done their due diligence and don't seem all that concerned, right? I think everyone would agree that Brandon Miller made a bad decision that day. But in terms, I don't think from the people I've spoken to around the league that there's a feeling that he's a bad person or a person that you don't want to bring into your locker room or is a risk long term. I think people, for the most part, have thought that he's a really hardworking guy, a good kind of piece to add to your locker room overall. That incident, obviously, you know, horrible what happened, but his involvement was rather minor kind of in the grand scheme of that incident. Unfortunately, when you're talking about someone's life, that's, you know, it's tragic, and it's something that every team has discussed and to try to discuss with him. But I think for the most part, it won't be something that holds back his stock on draft night.
So how set are we that – is there any – I mean, obviously, it's Wemby one, and you mentioned three other players. Is there any other dark horse candidates that could sneak in to that top, let's say, two through four? I mean, you know, is there anybody besides those three guys that you're looking at that might be a dark horse to get into the top three, four picks?
I think the one you'd probably highlight is Cam Whitmore from Villanova. If he's this big, explosive wing who can really make shots, didn't have the best year in college, but you're just so talented. And I think a guy that, depending on what happens with the first two to three picks, he could be on the board at four. I think there's a real chance that he winds up number four, and then that drops Amon Thompson to number five or even six at Orlando, which I think is probably his floor.
You mentioned some of the guys that are looking at being drafted, and when you look at besides Wemby, who do you think has the highest upside? Who do you think has that really high ceiling that could be the next most dominant player in the draft?
I think the next highest ceiling is probably Amon Thompson from Overtime Elite. I mentioned him a bit earlier, but I mean, he is 6'7". His upside is that he could be a point guard, and he is an elite athlete. Like, he is the best athlete in this draft class. He might be the best athlete in the last 10 years. I mean, it's him and Zion Williamson, in my mind, in terms of the level of athleticism and the level of functional athleticism, how he's able to use that in a game. Now, he hasn't necessarily played at the highest level, right? He's coming from, you know, essentially directly from high school. And so that will be a huge adjustment for him. His shot needs work. That's the question mark. But if he becomes a consistent outside shooter, to go with his ability to defend multiple positions, his ability to get downhill, he has a chance to be a really, really special NBA player.
You know, when you look at some of these players, you know, again, Victor, you know, Wemby is from France. Scoot Henderson is from G League Ignite. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily some of the, you know, traditional blue blood college players. I mean, is there now becoming a different pathway for guys to the NBA to increase their stock, or, you know, is still the old fashioned way of being, you know, in a blue blood program the best way to go?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is that there's just so many more avenues. It's not necessarily that one is better than the other. I think there's been mixed bag with G League so far. Some of the Overtime Elite stuff is too early to really tell, but some guys have raised their stocks. Some guys have struggled, and that has hurt them. Obviously, overseas is a growing and continue to grow in terms of its influence. I think the biggest thing is that kids really have options now, and NBA teams are scouting earlier and earlier. Like, there will be, you know, and there will be affiliations from all 30 NBA teams at Peach Jam, Nike's big recruiting event this summer. And they will be watching not just 17 new players who are a year away from college. They're going to be watching 15 and 16-year-olds getting ready for future draft classes. And so there's long-term planning. And because of that, I think teams feel confident that even if a kid chooses maybe the road less traveled, they've seen them in other contexts and feel pretty good about the guys they're getting.
Kevin Sweeney, college basketball writer, NBA draft writer for SportsIllustratedSI.com, joining me here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Who's one of those late first round sleeper picks that you're looking at? Who's one of those guys that could really end up being a high level player that maybe you get in that 20, you know, to 30 type of range?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, what Christian Brown did in the postseason for Denver this past year is a model of, like, what every team in the 20s is looking to draft, which is a guy that has some upside long-term but is really able to come in and help you right away. And I think this year that guy is Omax Prosper from Marquette. He's a 6'7", long, athletic wing who can guard multiple positions. He makes threes, and he's just low-maintenance. Like, he's going to come into an NBA game. You're never going to have to drum up a play. He's going to find ways to impact the game with his ability to defend, with his ability to keep the ball moving, with his ability to make shots and cut. I mean, he's just a really smart basketball player. He's gotten better every year. I mean, his development arc has been pretty crazy to watch. And so he was a guy that I think coming into the draft process, people thought, oh, maybe he could be late second round. Now it's late first, and it wouldn't even be shocking if he was off the board 18, 19 in this draft.
You know, it's funny because, you know, talking about Denver, talking about the Celtics, talking about Golden State, you know, they find players that even when you're drafting in the, you know, 20s to 30s, fit what they want to do. You know, is you know, again, outside of the stars, you know, in the NBA, are teams smarter or are players better about just fitting a role for a team that you don't have to? I mean, it's not like the NFL where you expect to draft somebody who can even be a difference maker at 25 or whatever like that. But it seems like they're, when the good teams draft in that position, they find guys that are role players that do exactly what they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best organizations just have an incredible pulse on what guys can help you immediately and what guys will fit into your culture. And I think the best players in the NBA fit into multiple systems and are able to help you because, you know, some of the same skill sets translate regardless of whether you're playing with Steph Curry or Nikola Jokic or Jason Tatum, right? For three very different players. But as a role player, how you impact winning is how you do things without the ball, how you defend. And I think those guys are really put a premium on in today's NBA. I think obviously scouting makes a huge difference, and that's like, you know, that is truly where you move the needle. And when you want to win championships, you have to make really good moves at the margins, right? Like, obviously it's great to land a Jokic in the second round, but that's not likely to happen a lot of times. But when you're Denver and you land Christian Brown with a late first round pick and he helps you, and Bruce Brown kind of off the waiver wire and he really, really helps you, like those small moves are the things that add up to winning championships. And I think that's what every team in the NBA is trying to replicate.
So how big of a can't miss is Victor Wembanyama? I mean, how much? I mean, look, Zion is a really good player, but he can't stay on the court and he can't stay healthy. And it doesn't matter how good of a player you are. If you miss 55 games a year, you're not impacting your basketball team. How good can this guy be at number one? And again, I think he's going to the right organization with you know, Pop and the San Antonio Spurs. But, I mean, how limitless is his ceiling right now?
I mean, he can be transcendent because he has the skill set of, you know, some of the best wings we've seen in the NBA with not just center size, like one of the biggest players immediately in the NBA at 7'4", 7'5". Like he does things when you watch games at really high levels. I mean, he's playing in France against teams that have 5, 6, 7 former NBA players and just dominating still. And yes, there will be clips taken out of context where he gets kind of shoved under the basket and beat up because he's not as big and strong as everyone else. But his overall impact on the game is just immense. So I think outside of injury, it's very hard to envision him failing. The only, you know, the only caveat, obviously, is that the expectations are now so high that anything but, you know, 7, 8, 9-time All-Star in his career, people are going to consider as a disappointment. But to me, like, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he reaches that ceiling and then not only that, but smashes through it. I think the hype is fully justified with Victor Wembanyama.
Is that still the knock and the hype that players that come from overseas aren't as tough, aren't as physical? I mean, you know, that was always the mantra about the soft European players that come over and play. Is that still a thing, or, you know, are guys now getting away from that kind of narrative or that label that's been put on them?
I think for the most part, we've gotten away from it. I mean, obviously some organizations are going to hold certain things, you know, more important than others. But I think with Victor, the biggest concern is just his frame, right? Like, I think it's less so, is he tough enough? I think most people around the league believe he's really competitive. It's more so, will his body hold up? Because we just have never seen a body like his in the NBA. So hopefully, you know, he does stay healthy, right? We don't want to see one of, you know, the great talents in the history of the league have his career derailed. But, I mean, that is the concern, right? If you have any doubt of whether Victor Wembanyama is going to have the career everyone wants to have, it's not, oh, we don't think his game will translate. It's, will he be able to stay on the floor for 82 games?
Kevin Sweeney, he covers college basketball in the NBA draft for Sports Illustrated. SI.com is where you can check out all of his work, and on Twitter at @CBB_Central. Kevin, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for being a part of the show here in Atlanta, and we will certainly chat again soon.
Looking forward to it, guys. Have a good one.
You got it. John Chuck, we will be back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey.com app.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.